Oh, team. That's right. Okay, so we switch back and forth, but Grand Wazir is backstage there. So yes, what a quirky time and what a quirky technical thing we've had getting here. But how wonderful our global community. So how and why are we convening? So it was a ways back that I was, urging the Shift Network to do something on January 6th, and they were like, no. And I was like, oh, autonomy is a sacrament. We can do things on our own, right? So we're convening this epiphany because it is such a beautiful epiphany, 12th night. I like the 12 days of Christmas, the whole thing. And in a way, it is the ending. It's time to stop eating the king's fare and go back to simpler food. But it's also such a powerful time, day, right now. I will show us and we can play with that too. Just the chart of right now for the fun of it. There we go. Alrighty. I think this is good. Whoops. Yes. And thank you for bearing with us in this interesting technical thing. And then also because we want to feel the kinship of it all. Let's see. Move this down here. Okay. Well. Okay. I don't know what to do with that bar. So here we are. It's welcome team and our global team. And why is it such a powerful time to convene right now? Because right at this moment, this is the chart of from where I am, Coyote Network News headquarters outside Washington, D.C. So this is the chart of where everything is right now. So right now, as we were dilly-dallying and backstage and all, kind of perfect because Mars and Jupiter in Scorpio have just set. They've just set. And just for the fun of it, 18 degrees Scorpio, the descendant, that's the western horizon from the equator, that's my mid-oven. But it also describes all of you guys. So let's make this a particular council, meaning we do like typing into chat, and also at some point we can really do Q&A. You can raise your hand. We'll explain how to do that. But we are all in this thing together, and it is a powerful time to convene Mars and Jupiter in Scorpio. Let's address the theme of backstage since you've been with us as we were going, how do we do that? And how does this spaceship work? So backstage, Scorpio realm, we're all backstage. And backstage is called the green room because it's from Greek theater, because every actor, all of us, regardless of our role, would spend time backstage in the green room, dedicating themselves to the flora and fauna of this earth. And so we are. We know it's a wild and dangerous time, but we want to bring in all of our qualities, all the skill set, all of the generous opportunities that are being given to us by Befana, she's the Epiphany Witch, right? So it is Twelfth Night, it's Epiphany, it's Befana, the witch who gives presents. And let's see, what are these presents? So part of my enthusiasm for gathering right now is it is a great opportunity. Mars, desire, and Jupiter, power of blessing and story, are conjoined, and they've just set together. Let me give the Sabian symbols for that degree, 17 plus Scorpio. There's two versions. I use many different allies, but it's a walk through autumnal woods, even though it's very cold here on the East Coast, getting a breathing space. All right, everybody, there we go. Experiencing the emotional fullness and deep changes around you, letting go sorts of realizations. Difficulty in sharing experiences on Zoom, possibly. Beautiful patterns and retreats. And we go, oh, that's great. The other version by my friend Steve Eardley, it's related. Winding road leads through glorious woods, romanticism, revelation of inner meaning and moments of emotional exaltation, dying to the past in order to experience the intensity of the present, glorious consummation of a life lived on the spiritual path, clarification of the inner realm, revelation of inner glory. All right, let's do that thing. But what we can do with the support of our combination wolf coyote pack, our wolfote pack, as we journey our short convening cahooting right now to set us up for the rest of the day and really the rest of this season and the rest of our lives, is the path of desire. What is it we want? You know, and because, you know, Mars and Jupiter are trining Neptune, this is an important theme. It's an important gift being bestowed on all of us. You know, this abundance, you know, for those of you who've been hanging with me for a while, you can chant along as we get to familiar material. But Neptune, dreams, vision, fairy tales. So it says we're all in a fairy tale, and fairy tale rules work really well. And I like to think of Neptune in Pisces, you know, in its home realm, of everything that has ever moved humans to conscious kinship. Now, everything that has ever encouraged humans to rejoin, you know, the choreography of creation. And here is the choreography of creation. So Neptune says, you know, let's make everything that has ever moved humans to conscious kinship available for fresh and beautiful expression. Ah. So in a fairy tale, you know, and we remember that cultures symbolically embedded their science, their intimate knowledge of botany, their capacity to help people die and help people be born, you know, symbolically embedded in fairy tales to be passed on. Yeah, and so what part of what we're redressing, how did we get into the modern world kerfuffle, you know, is, you know, at the alleged enlightenment moment, oh, let me just come back to everybody here, at the alleged enlightenment moment, you know, the unsupervised Mars team said, we don't need these symbolic languages like myths and fairy tales and astrology. No, we want just science, right? So what happened then that we are here to redress is, you know, science and knowledge was stripped of its moral, mythological cocoon, guiding cocoon, that all knowledge be used with a dedication to collective well-being. There we come back here. So to play back and forth with the chart of now, what is beautiful is, let's go for a fairy tale. What does a fairy tale tell us about Mars, our Mars that we can access now? Well, at least two things. You know, and I referred to the wonderful fairy tale of the Prince Kaneda. And we remember that fairy tales often start with a betrayal that catalyzes everybody on a journey that they would rather not have taken, but they are tricked into it, and it's going to turn out to be for the good of everybody. So as we gaze at the modern world, we might go, well, there's plenty of betrayal tricking us into a heroic journey. But when Prince Kaneda, or fill in your name, the hero or heroine sets forth, they almost always have a Mars, a wise animal. You know, sometimes it's a shaggy pony. You know, but again, feel your wise animal coming on in. You know, it can be any shape, the wise animal that accompanies you and that knows what to do when the mind does not. But to say with the wise pony, so when they get to the burning river and the glass mountain, the pony says, let go of control, let my reins be slack on my neck, and you hold on tight, because I know how to get us through this. So that's what the hero or heroine within all of us does. Let's go of control. We'll get to this dynamic of the Pluto, everybody in the underworld, in a moment here. It's really strong. Let go of control so real power and wisdom and guidance can come on in. So let go of control. And that's what we do. That's what the hero or heroine within us does. Let's go of control. Holds on tight, you know, to the little pony, and they soar over the burning river and up the glass mountain and attain the waters of life. You know, it's a longer thing, but that's the gist of it. But to get there, there's another Mars dynamic. You know, when the hero sets forth with wise shaggy pony that knows what to do when the mind does not, still, you know, the hero or heroine doesn't know where they're going. They're lost in the enchanted forest. And they encounter, you know, a wise Sufi disguised as a beggar. Now, this is really important in fairy tales, right? Manners, how we treat the apparently least among all of us has everything to do with the outcome and the endeavor. You know, so very often the wise guide is disguised as a beggar. And he comes up to the hero or heroine part of ourselves and says, you don't know where you're going, do you? You're lost in the enchanted forest. Here, let me give you, okay, here comes Mars again, an iron ball. Now, this is beautiful because iron is associated with Mars. And the wise Sufi beggar says, and throw this ball and follow wherever it goes. And this is very available right now. These portals are really open in a very beautiful way. And so they follow the iron ball, and the iron ball, you know, it's got gravity. So it goes around and around and around and goes all the way to the center of creation, to the center of the fairy realm, to the center of everything that has ever been done beautifully by humans or wolves or coyotes or cabbages, right, to that realm. And then, you know, so following the iron ball of our own desire. So as we convene right now, it's Epiphany, it's Twelfth Night. Epiphany is when the Magi or the astrologers arrived finally. I do love, you know, on my Christmas tree, still up through tonight, my favorite, you know, Christmas tree ornament, which is the Bethlehem nativity scene, and the Magi are arriving, and then they all exclaim together, "It's a girl!" Right? And that would really change the story. The story of, you know, how are we guiding? So we're backstage. It is time for all of us, for all sane reverence and humble cooperation with nature's beauty, to assume cultural narrative lead. Now, this is tricky, right? Because, you know, as Dorothy Parker says, what fresh hell is this? There's so much kind of, oh, conniption fits and everything. And we go, we want to know about these things. We want to have, this is the sacrament being proffered to us by Mars and Jupiter, trine Neptune, which is compassion with sizzle, deeply informed compassion with sizzle, meaning we know everything, investigative deep delving, and we're going to love the circumstance anyway, even if we can't quite love all the humans involved somehow. But again, we are backstage assuming cultural narrative control as such a crucial dynamic. And, you know, how are we placed now? And why is it such a great time for us to convene? You know, even through all of the kerfuffles, thank you all for getting here through, you know, the times and the thing and the computer thing. Okay. So I want to just point out I'll point it out, but always aspire to translate it. There's a very beautiful thing going on here. So we have Mars and Jupiter conjoined. They will be exactly conjoined for the fun of it at 7:39 p.m. East Coast time tonight, but they're very close. They're very close. Desire animates the story. Desire animates the story of our fondest dream, which is completely practical. Here we go, just adding in another little part of this dynamic. Mars and Jupiter have a 60-degree angle, you know, a sextile to Venus and the Sun and Pluto, all in the underworld, meaning when planets are close to the Sun, you know, we don't see them, right? They're called in the underworld. So Venus is in the underworld, gathering mojo for the next stage of Renaissance. She will emerge, according to our different latitude, as the evening star somewhere around February 20th, you know, and be the evening star from February 20th to October 22nd-ish. Again, it all depends, again, when we see her or him. Let's remember that the Venus orbital cycle is one that all cultures would have paid attention to. In the West, it's Inanna. Again, the Inanna myth is the Venus scientific astronomical cycle. We love that. In Mesoamerica, Venus is Quetzalcoatl, a guy. But all cultures would really pay deep attention to the Venus cycle, as we are being drawn to do. So, for instance, in Mesoamerica, Quetzalcoatl is a pretty good leader, you know, and then he gets a little remote. And Tezcatlipoca, the Lord of the Smoking Mirror, whispers in his ear and says, "You're getting a little old, you know. You're getting a little here. Drink this balche. Drink this Neptunian toxic mimic sacrament. Drink this balche, and it will be really good for you." And so Quetzalcoatl does drink it. He does terrible things. He opens up offshore drilling. He sleeps with his sister. He abuses the least of humans. Remember that Neptune, in its radical element, represents everything that mainstream culture has forgotten, exiled, undervalued, dissed, but said to be where a culture's soul or its replenishing vision lives. And we love that. You know, so it says, "Oh, humans, don't be distracted by celebrity hoo-ha. Look at what's missing, what has been undervalued. What has been dissed but is of enormous value, that's really where the action is. You know, and I do love Steve Behrman's quip, the answer to the drug problem, improve reality. We go, there we go, the answer to every problem. So, you know, so in the Quetzalcoatl myth, he's given the toxic mimic, you know, Balche, and he does terrible things. And then he wakes up with a tremendous hangover going, I have to go away. I have to go away. The culture needs to reinvent leadership. So he goes away, and the Mesoamericans would understand when Quetzalcoatl or Venus is in the underworld, like right now, that it was time to redefine the job of leadership. And that's why we've all come here together, you know, to go, you know, what is our definition of leadership? And how do we all insource what we've been outsourcing? You know, all the planets. It's the jaunty phrase I coined that I'm quite happy with, which is entheo, indigenous, endogenous. I like it. Entheo, again, sacraments which guide us to, you know, divine within. You know, entheo, indigenous, again, ancient wisdom pouring to us to guide us in our time, all myths, all stories, you know, trying to help us. You know, and endogenous, one of my, you know, kind of new-ish favorite words, it means intrinsically within. So we have cannabis receptors. They are endogenous. We have DMT receptors. You know, all mammals do. It's the psychoactive principle in ayahuasca, but it's intrinsic. It's endogenous to it, to us. And it's thought that when people are born, there's a little burst of DMT. And when people die, there's a big burst of DMT. And DMT takes us to the building blocks of creation. That's kind of what you see on that dynamic as a participatory agent. We go, ooh. Endogenous. And I like teasing it out, meaning, well, beauty is endogenous. We have receptors for beauty. This beautiful astro-mythological language, let's say it's endogenous. It lives within us. So as we speak to it now, we're quickening these parts of ourselves inside. So Quetzalcoatl, you know, goes away to reinvent leadership. Let us all insource our Saturn. Let us all be leaders. Let us all assume cultural narrative lead. There we go. And it's a terrible historic, ironic mistake that on the day when Venus, Quetzalcoatl, was to return, that's when Cortez showed up, and he was a man was mistaken for a god. No, let's not ever do that again. There we go. So that's that part. You know, again, it is time to go backstage in a deep way to reinvent leadership. And part of this dynamic that is available to us, and why I was so enthused to overcome all kerfuffles to convene with us, is this idea of all of us right now, whether you write things down in your journal, whether you incubate them, you know, this day, this weekend, this week, you know, desire with a dedication that it be for collective well-being, so that we can begin to Mars animate the desirable story backstage. And then we're going to pull the switch on the reality train so that the desirable can waft into the world. So it's an interesting issue before our council of how to be deeply informed and pay attention to how dangerous and difficult things are and the conniption fits of Trumpel-Stiltskin and all of those things without feeding it. I bring this before the council because as Grand Wazir was saying to me recently, you know, whatever you click on, like, don't like, whatever, it's feeding it on every kind of level, energetically, but also literally. And we go, how interesting. Which is why, you know, it's more than perfect that we humans cannot resolve the innumerable problems we've imposed on our kin by ourselves. It's by ourselves that got us into this pickle. So this powerful time here, again, I'll keep animating, says we can't even be who we want to be by ourselves. You know, that's why, you know, we take these dedicated vows. It is such a, it's always a good time, right, to write our manifesto of dedicated devotion. But now is so powerful that way, you know, in our crafting and our writing and whatever we want to do now, you know, in this call, but we're really just starting something that we want to waft on out there into the world. And what is our, it's our dedicated and ideal selves, you know, composed of all the teachings that we love, all the mythological beings, all the animals. Yeah, in the show, the radio show I did with Dan Flores on Coyote America, you know, and he wasn't a coyote. He was a good human, but he wasn't exactly a coyote. But I did want to bring in those qualities of coyote that we want to, you know, encourage in on all of us. But he said something that I wanted him to pause more on, but we can do it for ourselves. He said it was 4,000 years ago that the Greeks switched from animal deities to human deities. You know, and I was like, let's go back there. And we were off into something else. But I want to bring that to us here. You know, 4,000 years ago, I'm delving also into Indian philosophy and Indian deities and the pantheon. So it's 4,000 years ago, you know, for many beings, that there was a switch from animal deities to human. And, you know, I think it's something we might want to go back to re-examine. And I've been reading, you know, the Upanishads, you know, dusting off all my India courses because I'm off to India next Friday. You know, but we tricksterize everything, right? We tricksterize everything. So as I'm going back through sacred teachings that have meant a great deal to me in the journey of my life, because we're all thinking of the whole journey of our life and who brought what to now, you know, and how do we become pragmatic mystics and apply all of this? So as I'm going back all over the sacred texts, part of me, you know, and, you know, it's, autonomy is a sacrament, but part of me goes, yeah, it's still so human. Because the Upanishads, you know, written, you know, six century BC, a really rockin' wild time. It's Buddha, it's Zoroaster, it's the Upanishads. It was a great renaissance in so many ways. But they do bring up part of the deep dedication is the primacy of humans, that humans are distinctly different from the rest of nature. And by my own affinity, I have a coyote wariness of that. Now, remember, I lived with Stella Coyote, an actual coyote, for longer than I've lived with a human. It's kind of like a fairy tale, right? So I'm really, you know, about us re-entering kinship with animals and plants. And it might be, you know, if we again bring back the, you know, all the myths and stories that are trying to speak to us, that like the Mabinogian Welsh, you know, Arthurian legends. And, you know, I do bring this up a lot. It's in my sourdough starter magic backpack, but again, you can chant along, but it's again, very powerful to mention anything now. So in the Mabinogian, you know, which is old stories collected 10th century, there's a moment where the elders get together. That's very Capricorn Council, the Council of Mavens dedicated to the next seven generations. The elders get together and they say, uh-oh, the men just found out they have something to do with children. And things were going so well in this community kind of realm. And we can see, you know, what's going to happen. And, you know, women and children will become viewed as property, and humans will set forth on their individual journey, leave, you know, until they lose kinship, not only with each other, but with, you know, nature herself, until the earth might die. And then at this point, some people, there we are, you know, will keep all the value of their individual journey, but rejoin, this is so right now here, it's like pitching to us right this second, but rejoin the whole big dream, right? And then the earth might be saved. Now, I'm throwing many balls in the air here. I hope to catch many of them. But part of also the desire of convening to unfurl before us what is available for this year, and I think it's a return to animism myself for, you know, that's my affinity. Everything's alive. Everything is equally worthy of respect. You know, and when Neptune says, you know, whatever has been dissed or exiled is very often where a culture's soul is. And I think that's our relationship to plants and animals. So in the Mabinogian, they say, yeah, keep, keep all the value of individual journey, where we've journeyed from the far reaches of the beginning of our own life and even back by our cultural affinities, but to rejoin, to keep the distinctness, but to rejoin back into, creativity, into creative, psychic, imaginative participation. So Pluto gives us a giant cauldron. I myself am eager to throw the hubris of humanism into this cauldron and ladle out, the truth of animism, everything alive. And part of the journey of this, of our adventure through this year, many things I want to put on the sort of signpost, but part of the beauty of this is that here's Uranus still at its stationing degree. In mid-May, Uranus will enter Taurus. Taurus is our rising sign. Enter Taurus, which is the realm of sensual incarnation. And it chimes in to remind us that metaphors are the incarnational garb whereby power enters the world. We go metaphors and blessings, enter the world. But Uranus in Taurus, and then it's going to retrograde back into Aries, and then, and that's part of the journey of 2018. But for me, and everybody, just feel if it resonates, because autonomy is a sacrament, it says it's the quickening, the awakening, the spicy awakening of a global animism, of the earth herself. And so it's not so much any of these philosophies of transcendence and when can we leave this veil of tears and humans are more important than others. And we go, that might have been an interesting chapter of development and of exquisite writing. And we do love in the Upanishads that, Thoreau and Emerson read the Upanishads, the sacred teachings of India. And then Gandhi read Thoreau and Emerson, which is how he found out about the Upanishads, endogenous to his own culture. So may we all be cross-pollinating beings, this to and fro, this interest. And the dynamic also of, it's Ananda Kumaraswamy, a great, Indian philosopher who was one of the great Arthurian legend scholars about the Grail legend. We go to-ing and fro-ing, syncretism. Syncretism is a sacrament. For all of us, Mars, Jupiter, it says we extend our deep delving, spicy curiosity, widely to everything with which we feel an energetic affinity. We gather it back in, we edit it, what was I looking for? Where did the moon went away? Oh, that's right. Where can I stick our, there we go. Okay, there we go. The moon in Virgo. And let me stop sharing for a moment and come back to the chat thing. DMT. Oh, Anna Warwick says DMT. Dimethyl tranfucida. It's the active ingredient in ayahuasca and many ceremonial entheogens. But it's endogenous. It lives in all mammals. That's right. Entheo, indigenous, endogenous. Thank you, Richard, for doing that. That's good. Yes. And you can. That's also the issue about talking about Neptune. Is like, whoa, where were we? Okay, let's circle right back around here. Entheo, indigenous, endogenous. Right. So we cast our net of curiosity widely. We haul it in. Oh, that's right. It was the moon in Virgo that sent me off on a tangent. That's why I wanted to ask. Have other people felt or noticed around them on social media or whatever that just even in these last couple of days, moon Virgo is critic, analyst, healer, but we can also stop with just the critic, but we want to keep going. Any kind of edgy, kerfuffly thing, does that resonate? And we go, all right, we got to throw that into the cauldron because the moon just trined Pluto. Let me come back to the chart here. I can see it. I'll share. Let me come back to this chart. The chart of the ongoing movement of now. So we are in the underworld with Venus, and the Quetzalcoatl is reinvent leadership. for each one of us to define leadership in order to assume cultural narrative lead in our own lives and also in the world. And then we do want to honor the Inanna part. You know, there's many ways to tell every story, and we keep wanting to track everything back to its originating liberating impulse before it got orthodoxed or you know, believed in or any of those, or bamboozled or snookered in any way, all the way back. So in the telling of many tales, so when characters go to the underworld, you know, there's many ways to tell that story. And it's way late when it's, you know, Persephone is raped and kidnapped and all of those things. And we go, no, Persephone means Proserpina, first serpent woman. You know, and one of the great scholars of the Eleusinian mystery says there's many ways to tell every story. And we want to go back again to antiquity, you know, further back in our own psyches to kind of find it. And, you know, Karl Rook, one of the great scholars, said, you know, in one of the versions of the Persephone myth told by Plato, the Pluto figure is not a raping, kidnapping guy. The Pluto figure is pharmacia. It's sacred plants that take us to the underworld of an initiatory dynamic. So we're going all the way back, you know, again, gleaning all the unique separate journey of humans, all the different wisdom traditions, but going all the way back to the plants and animals, you know, and our kinship with them. And we might say, you know, what is our definition of what it is to be human? You know, and we say, for starters, to discern the pattern of evolutionary intelligence and align and partner with that. So our deep dedication, again, part of why I thought it was so wonderful to gather now in our way, you know, is deep dedication. What is it we are dedicated to? What is it we love? Because the cooperators are really standing by for that. You know, and in the Inanna myth, so Inanna goes to the underworld. There's many ways of describing that. Some say she's tricked by her sister, but that's pretty late. She's going to the funeral of an old age, in fact, the Taurian age. But it's always dodgy to get out of the underworld. You need a buddy. You know, but for our purposes, you know, as Venus is in the underworld, gathering mojo for the next stage of Renaissance, and what is the next stage of Renaissance? And that's why when Inanna gets back with the help of her friend, she lounges around a while, and the Sumerian myth from 3,500 years ago is very trippy, and it says one day she's contemplating the wonders of her own vulva, going, oh, it is so great to be a woman, autonomous woman, it's a girl, and that's when the idea occurs to her, and may it be for all of us too, Uranus lightning flash, that she's going to rescue human culture, which has been kidnapped by Enki, the god of wisdom, who has become a tyrant. Now, what we distill from that right now is very sophisticated of the Sumerians to say anyone unchallenged, even the god of wisdom, will become tyrannical. So here is our trickster qualities, which is we love having grand wazirs and buddies and, you know, our dedicated manifesto who hold us to our ideals, you know, and who challenge us, but with spicy compassion, with, you know, compassion with sizzle, you know, to hold us. And we make a kind of telepathic backstage agreement, you know, amongst us all too, as we dedicate, you know, O spirit of this group extending into the mysterious, you know, memosphere, you know, hold each one of us to this and let us welcome being challenged as a playful, healing service, going, you know, again, you know, what is our definition of wealth? We'll get to these things and also our definition of friendship. And it's like, well, true equal peers, you know, all of the myths of, you know, the round table, the convening of, you know, a round table of shining, radiant, equal individuals. And I go, yes, these are the new forms, you know, in which everybody's got a crucial piece of the Renaissance to contribute. Who brought what, you know, and who has what affinities, you know, these, and how can we borrow qualities of the plants and animals that we admire to form a living partnership? Now, everything that I hold dear is animated here, this backstage capacity to wheel and deal. you know, and again, the things that I carry with me, right? The Lakota elder on the radio years and years ago, we were talking about Stella Coyote and her youth then, and he goes, coyotes, smartest, among the smartest of creatures in the world. You know, and then he said, you know, we Lakota did not hunt alone. Here comes the indigenous part of entheo, indigenous, endogenous. He said, those gifted at trance and reverie, we all get this, you know, again, you know, in your invisibly kind of raise your hand if you want this, the capacity to go into a reverie and a trance for backstage pragmatic stuff. He said, those gifted at reverie would go into a trance and they would broker a working relationship deal with the wolves and coyotes. And he said, and we would all hunt together for a season. And if you want to destroy a culture and lead it to cruelty and mayhem and separation and drill, offshore drilling, you know, destroy this capacity to go into reverie and imaginatively broker a deal. Now, putting a little pause over here too, I love in you know, Rachel Harris's book, Listening to Ayahuasca. She was a wonderful radio, is a wonderful radio guest. And she said, you know, neuroscientists wiring up the human brain said, when we speak to something invisible, it stimulates the same portion of our brain as though we were having tea with a friend, right? So to our brain, backstage and onstage are equal, invisible and visible are equal, real and imagined are equal. You know, the molecular level of reality, you know, the power of conjuring and visioning are equal, and we love that. So, you know, the Lakota guy said, those gifted, and may we all be gifted, you know, may we all invite and magnetize the gifts we would like to experiment with, our larger empathic capacities, our clairvoyance, our psychometry, you know, the capacity to read stories off of things. We are all open to this. So, you know, and he said, this is really, really an important part of culture, to create working alliances across species borders. Again, we are all cross-pollinators by what we love and what we feel an affinity with. And that's really important, right? And that's really here now, to go into a reverie, to imagine whatever we imagine is very eager to don actual molecular garb. The things that I hold dear are very, very active now. You know, metaphors, incarnational garb whereby power enters the world, blessings, incarnational garb whereby power enters the world, you know, whatever we want to conjure, you know, bring into play, that's really, you know, kind of crucial that way. And I partner that. I partner that with my friend Robinette Kennedy, disguised as a psychologist who lives half the year in Georgia and half the year in Crete. We've all got these experimental things kind of going. And she, who is playful, right, and very informed, she's an archaeologist and a psychologist and lives in Crete and, you know, very pro-woman and everything, you know. But it was she that said, what if the idea of matriarchy is a patriarchal concept? Which is fun. I think it's fun for us to question everything and play because it's our trickster selves. And she said, what about actual equality between Mars and Venus, between men and women, between humans and their considering of the lives of others? Actual equality. And that's what wants to kind of come alive now, you know, in each one of us. Actual equality. And that a lot of the archaeological evidence in places like Malta and also different sites in Peru, you know, with no evidence of weapons, you know, thousands of musical instruments, fantastic art, and spirals, a culture with spirals we know is pretty wise because spirals are nature's way of resolving conflict. In that realm, what if the idea of matriarchy is a patriarchal concept is fun, that actual equality would look like a matriarchy because it's so out of balance. But the crucial thing that she then adds after that, that I've kept with me in my magic backpack, is she said, the modern concept of worship is so silly, meaning you are great, I am nothing, now give me this thing. And she said, in hunter-gatherer society and throughout the Mediterranean and Crete, there was great reverence and respect between onstage and backstage, between invisible and visible. But she said, but the backstage invisible seeks incarnational invitation as much as we seek communion with it. So I go, I love this. I love this. As long as we have a hierarchical spirituality, you know, which there's many good things, but we want to distill things and liberate things. We're liberating everything. As long as we have a hierarchical spirituality, we're going to end up with, you know, Donald Trump as, or the monstrous cartoons of tyranny that we see around us. So that's when I coined the phrase democratic animism, wheel and deal animism. And we still have, you know, Uranus, you know, squaring, you know, Venus is coming to square again. Venus is also coming for her appointment with Pluto. I love a friend of mine said in personal relationships, this means that, you know, Venus diving into the cauldron implodes, incinerates and bubbles away all past patterns of relationship. There we go. So that we can ladle things out. You know, we throw things into the cauldron and ladle things out. And so I like, you know, this ladling out, this democratic animism of wheel and deal spirituality, which is part of the dynamic. And I've seen some fairly effective things recently, you know, in which just due to our own inner dedication magnetizes outward opportunity, you know. So I've had occasion to have, you know, sort of powerful people in a medium conventional way in trouble come to help, you know, to seek help from me and some others out. And so I go, all right, but it's coyote wheel and deal spirituality. You know, if you are really dedicated, you know, we will invite in Trickster to get you out of this kerfuffle, but it's a wheel and deal thing. It's like Stella Coyote. You know, what are you putting on the table? If this, then that. See, because the coyote trickster spirituality, it is wheel and deal. You know, it's what anthropologists call transactional spirituality, like New Orleans and Vudun and Santeria and animism, meaning, you know, it's a to and fro collaborative deal. You know, it's like, you know, the people going backstage to negotiate and broker, you know, a deal with the wolves and coyotes. I love that image of each one of us emerging going, whoa, it wasn't easy. You know, the coyotes want the front left leg and half the liver of every other deer. And the wolves are cool with that. And the deer are cool with that. Everybody back on stage. So we seek to set in motion, you know, what I want to keep going in my wonderful Monday night council that you can join. And we have many people on this call who are part of that. And then there's an upcoming shift course on the Zodiac that begins on January 30th, the eve of the lunar eclipse. Wow, it's a lunar eclipse of positive intrigue. And you can find out more about that. You know, I think you got mailed the link to find out more about that. And you can ask me more about that too. But this is not a marketing call, exactly. You know, there, we mentioned things you can do on the side, but this is a cahooting call in some fun ways. So, right, transgender, gender fluid, beautiful, Anne-Marie, exactly. Again, gender fluid, backstage, twin-souled beings, all that has been dissed and exiled is what we need, mythologically restored. You know, we're grateful to all the beings. So, oh, that's great. Oh, and Richard wrote, yes, dimethyltryptamine is a tryptamine molecule which occurs in many plants and animals. That's great. Joyce says, sharing into the collective whatever we have an excess of, an affinity for, and whatever is easy enough to share, just like this meeting we're having here. Thank you, Caroline. So here in Hillsboro, North Carolina, we are hosting a collective food-growing small farm in need of a home. It feels like a step in service, mixing those gifted in going into reverent trance to cross-pollinate with the food growers, spiraling from there into balance. Right, and it's really useful. We're priming the pump in our gathering here of everything we've ever been that was useful, that we put something in our magic backpack and then forgot, but we rummage around and go, there's everything we need in there. There's Dorothy slippers, there's all of those things. And so I remember it was the summer that Nixon was impeached that I spent in Findhorn in the north of Scotland. And again, see, we love Trickster. Trickster needs to be everywhere. So in many spiritual communities that I've been a part of here and there, and wrote a series of essays that I never got around to publishing, but they were really good, called Lotus Feet of Clay, meaning everything good that gets us into spiritual communities, and when does it get authoritarian, and when is the trickster not welcome, and when is it time to leave? There we go. So, you know, again, like many spiritual communities, Findhorn had its vision, its dedicated aspiration up here, and sometimes that was true, we were really living it, and sometimes it wasn't true and people were pretending they were living it. However, we sift through. They had a pretty great model that was true enough about cooperating with nature. And I loved the model. I lived with the beekeepers that summer and work in all the different huts. And I go, well, what do the bees get out of this? And they said, well, nature is harsh just on its own, especially north of Scotland. So sometimes in nature, bees won't make enough honey for themselves. So we cut a deal with the bees. We say, when you have excess honey, we will take your excess honey, but we guarantee you that whenever you need honey to get through a winter, we will provide that for you. And the bees seem quite happy with that. The beekeepers never wore nets or anything, and there was like, really good. So this to and fro, you know, and so with the power-possessing beings, I go, all right, you know, if you're clean enough and you're dedicated enough and you get out of this pickle, then what are we putting on the table as your, you know, that you will do this in return? We're kind of waiting for this because there were some people we got out of their own pickles, possibly. We don't presume, but it looked like that. The magic really worked. And we go, remember the deal you cut. This is also really important in fairy tales, right, to remember the deal. Because very often when humans get out of a pickle in a fairy tale, they forget their bargain, and then woe be unto them, woe be unto them. You know, it's in the Arthurian legends, it's like Sir Balin and Sir Balan are given a sword from the fairy realm, Bifana, you know, and everybody is willing to bestow gifts of qualities and gifts of skills, you know, the sword, the magic thing, the eloquence, all of that. But it's a wheel and deal thing. And so Sir Balin and Sir Balan are given a powerful sword, and they do great things and save many lives and derive. They get a little important, though. They get a little important. And the fairy realm says, now return those swords we lent you. And they're like, no. And they're like, oh, and the fairies are like, oh, you know, this is going to be very bad for you. You will each kill the thing you most love. And they're like, no, we can't give up the celebrity. And it ends up that they're in masks and they enter into a duel, and by mistake they end up killing each other. But these are all fairy tale things to distill. You know, all of our graces, our wheel and deal, loaned to us. You know, if you give me this, I promise that. It's such a epiphany, 12th night, wheel and deal kind of time. And I want to bring in, you know, in our meandering here, the dead. I want to bring in the dead. I want to bring in Stella Coyote, whose hair I have here. Stella Coyote's hair, again, as a sacrament for all of us and our dedication to be agents of trickster wheel and deal and democratic animism, you know, and cahooting with the powerful resonance of everything in nature, you know, quickening. And that's part of the Findhorn dynamic as well, which was true. There were a lot of true experiments there. Their model in the north of Scotland was, if you give energy to the plants will manufacture the minerals in the soil that they need. And I think that might have been a true part of their mythology. They did composting and all kinds of stuff, but they did mineral analysis, and it did seem to. They had roses that bloomed in winter and 40-pound cabbages. That was all true, you know, and it's again this wheel and deal, this magical fairy tale kinship, this honoring of what has been dissed, this willingness to engage in, you know, a kind of partnership dynamic. So yeah, with our trickster selves. So Stella Coyote, you know, from her ancestral realm now, hello, you know, gives us her coyote hair, in which we make our dedication, you know, or we put a little pause in this moment to go, what is it we desire? What is it we desire? The Western esoteric tradition is the path of desire, not so much transcendence, but we like to syncretize from everything. It's desire. It says, if people learn about their desires and they visualize the thing happening, it will lead them, the path of desire will lead them into greater and greater compassionate participation in the whole big thing, going, I want this thing. Oh, I visualized it and I did get that thing. And now that was sort of a silly desire. Now I want this thing. Now there we go. So I'm going to honor that. So we're making a deal now. We're saying, oh, spirit of trickster, booking agent of synchronicity, as we enter into this increasing field of connectedness, you know, and the inner dedication, you know, is what kind of sends out a signal, dee, 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 about the quality of what we want to connect with. So, oh, spirit of Stella Coyote, oh, spirit of trickster, oh, spirit of democratic animism, you know, residing within each one of us, willing to go open the path before, whoops, it's alive on its own. Open the path. Oh, it is alive. Open the path before. All right. Are you here, Stella? Open the path before each one of us, you know, that we may cultivate and contribute our unique, fabulous gifts to the world at this time of dire beauty in a way that is replenishing and full of yip, yip, defiant joy. Ha. And then somebody just sent me my friend Jay Arnell's ashes, right? I go, whoa, is that like all of Jay? Because Jay always wanted to go to India, was deeply involved in India, and my friend who lived with Jay, who was a great wizard, we call on all of our allies. And it was Jay, you know, from his own tradition, who taught me a very useful preamble before we do anything. He would say, you know, free me from ego magic and fill me with a healing spirit that we can name with our head, our heart, and our instinct all that we and others need named for our greater health, happiness, and contribution to the whole. So that was sort of a combo, Jay and me, a kind of dedication before doing everything. Free us from ego magic and fill us with a healing spirit that we can name with our head, our heart, and our instinct all that needs naming, you know, to encourage ourselves and others, you know, to contribute to the world in a way that is replenishing and beautiful. So my friend had said, would you like to take some of Jay with you to India? And I go, just a little homeopathic amount, because whatever, and here's what came. It's quite heavy. And my friend, and I go, is this all of Jay? And she goes, he was a big guy. No, other people have parts of him all over the place. So here's Jay, right? This is very kind of Pluto-ish. And then I also have from great allies, you know, in South Africa. Thank you. In case you're here, oh, great team. This umpepu, you know, which is the first umpepu I had was grown for me by Sangomas. And then this was somebody on our Monday night trickster council who lives in South Africa. Bless you. You know, arranged for this to be smuggled into America. Nothing to see here, customs guys. But it is a kind of umpepu that is for all of us. They said it was used only for Sangomas at first. And then they said, well, the world's in such dire straits. All the gates are open to all esoterica, everything, you know, all the sacred things, the internal dedication. May this open up the pathway between the visible and the invisible, you know, and conjure our allies and, you know, our Stella Coyote and our Jay Arnall and all the people we love and all the animals and all the critters. We believe nothing. We entertain possibilities. We invite them into our being as part of our invisible council. And, you know, as I do this, you hold it under each ear. We can just sort of do this telepathically. And there we go. It's a death and rebirth opening up to, you know, the invisible. And I love my Sangoma friend in South Africa, you know, these mysteries of the invisible. And so my friend Rod Suskin, splendid Sangoma and astrologer in South Africa, he said, well, a couple of things I think that are pertinent. When he was growing up in South Africa, and he's a white Jewish interested in all religions kind of guy, his high school, you know, took them to many different spiritual traditions, and one was to meet with Sangomas, a Capricornian kind of council, and each student went in. And he said that when he went in and they were doing divinatory shells, there was this hubbub. You know, people, the elders were like, whoa. And they said to Rod, the ancestors say, you are Sangoma. And Rod said, well, thank you very much, but I couldn't possibly go through that training because, one, I'm a vegetarian. The Sangoma training is not like a weekend workshop. It's really daunting and serious. You go through years of apprenticeship and complexity, and then as the culmination, you have to dream of your sacrificial animal. What is it? Then you have to dream where it is. Then you have to go and bring it back, and then in a huge public ceremony, you sacrifice the animal and you drink the. And anyway, so Rod says, "No, I couldn't. I admire that, but I can't." And they said, "No, the ancestors didn't say you must become Sangoma. They said you are Sangoma, right? So you are." So he has the initiatory bracelets, and he felt bad about it, you know, because he didn't really do the thing. And you know, in South Africa, the Sangoma, you're wearing the, you know, nobody can speak to you in public unless you speak first. There's a whole complex honorific. It's also, I remember at the Parliament of World Religions, there was staying at a hotel, you know, and there was the maitre d', who was very good. And then when my Sangoma friends came, the maitre d' bowed in deep respect and pulled back his shirt and revealed his initiatory necklaces and pulled back his shirt cloths and revealed his initiatory it's like, oh, a Sangoma. It's like the Sufi is disguised as a maitre d' or a beggar everywhere. Like, oh, this kinship, right? So you are Sangoma, and without presumption or hubris, you know. And then, you know, he was embarrassed, and then other Sangoma said, no, you are Sangoma. You do astrology, you do tarot, and that sort of. The reason I just bring that up is, you know, each one of us, where do we feel without presumption or deriving status or hubris or being important or any of those things, which are very vulnerable to Pluto. Pluto loves to eat those things. You know, we go, well, what are we? You know, there's a wonderful Ifa saying that says, we have been sent by the ancestors to complete their work. So with this Umpepu, with this Mars-Jupiter conjunction in Scorpio, you know, at Epiphany, when the Magi arrive, and when Befana, the witch, hands out presents, you know, what are we willing to magnetize and receive, again, from the fairy realm, from the ancestral realm, that we can be even more ourselves in this, you know, wild and crazy time? So we go, okay, there you go back, Jay. I'll be taking you to India discreetly to the Hanuman Temple. There we go, okay. There's that. Right, Ashe says, Jude Valentine, I'm reading backwards though. Oh, hi, dear Jay, that's wonderful. Do you know Jay, Anne Marie? Ah, or maybe you know him now. That's really great. So let's play more. Let's play a little bit more. Oh, Grand Wazir, can you tell people are we going to encourage people to raise their hands? Grand Wazir. Oops.
I was unmuting.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah.
I could see. As being the host, I do not see raising of hand.
No, I think you click manage participants. Oh.
All right.
I love
that theory.
Right, you are the Grand Wazir. And I think for anybody who would like to speak, if you click manage participants, I think this is how this works. There, we're all in this thing together. You can then see your name and click on a little raise hand icon. I think that works. Huge uptick in penis jokes. Wait, I'm just randomly. It's like a divination. We are pragmatic mystics. That was good. Okay, are you grappling with that possibility? Maybe.
Simone is saying click participants, and then on the bottom right it says raise hand.
Okay, that's good. And that will give me just a little time to catch up with the chat, which is great. Hi, Linda Weston. Hi, lots of people. Oh, look, Melon Lou has raised their hand. Can you find them, O Grand Wazir?
Unmuting now.
Hello.
Melon Lou, you're unmuted.
Ah, you're unmuted. Speak forth. Feel free to have your voice. Because there's another fantastic thing. Oh, but anyway, yes. Hi.
Perhaps struggling with audio on her side, or their side.
Okay. Right. So they can, you've unmuted, and in their lower left part of the screen, they've unclicked the little microphone as well. But and Joyce Bowden has raised her hand. There, you're going to be scampering.
Okay, I'm muting Melon Lou, and I'll message you privately. Unmuting Joyce Bowden.
Okay.
Hear me?
Yes, a little bit louder, please, but we can.
Yeah. Hi. I'm so happy to be a part of this on this auspicious day. Caroline, I really like reading mythology and kind of veiled as novels. And if you have a list of recommendations, or you want to just throw some stuff out there for us to be reading, and, you know, like when I read The Fifth Sacred Thing by Starhawk, you know, it really gave me a template to understanding and you know, tens or twenties of other things. But from your perspective, would you recommend to us some interesting histories or novels or something?
Right. Well, autonomy is a sacrament, so I won't dodge this all important question. But I do love, just to bring in part of ourselves here, that Mercury in Sagittarius, our far-reaching curiosity and what we read and what we think about, is exactly trining Uranus by degree, but it'll be even more fantastic at 6:38 p.m. East Coast time. Soon, where do we want genius? Where do we want inspiration? Where do we want to know what to read? You know, and for everybody here also too, may we be a jolly and liberating voice for what we love. Right, because I also want to get us going on, you know, before we deconvene here, you know, on what is our desire and how can we bless each other. So that's a huge and fabulous question. I love the novel Forever by Pete Hamill, for a lot of reasons. It's one of the best books I've ever read as a novel, and just very, very briefly, because it draws upon a lot of what we're talking about. Starts off in 17th century Ireland, fabulous, with all of its complex animism and then priest-ridden things and all kinds of stuff, but a live, vital connection to magic. And there's a fantastic magic horse that travels throughout the whole novel that starts in Ireland. Man must leave Ireland for challenging circumstance in early 17th century. He is in a boat. There are people of great dignity and power, great medicine people, enslaved below deck. He is kind to them. This is like a fairy tale thing as well. He is kind to them and treats them with reverence. May we all do such things. So in return, they bestow upon him a gift, and it's the gift of immortality as long as he never leaves Manhattan. So it's a fantastic 200-year historic novel full of actual history and, you know, betrayals and George Washington telling, you know, and the powerful Aoife, you know, every place is every place. There's been such incredible mixing, you know, the Mesoamerica into, you know, the prefix Atl, A-T-L, Atl means water. So Atlantic is a Mayan word. Atlantis is a Mayan word. Anyway, so there's all this mixing. Anyway, so there were also, you know, huge, you know, Africans and Aoife tradition and all of that, you know, and brewing in New York. And George Washington did tell the slaves that if they fought for the revolution, they would be freed. And he betrayed them, right? Which, again, there's the beginning of another fairy tale to resolve all betrayals, you know, all betrayals. But anyway, so I love the novel Forever by Pete Hamill, like, a lot. That's what comes to mind.
Yeah.
And also the novel Tikal by Daniel Peters. He is an actual Mayan scholar, not somebody who just kind of made stuff up, but it's fantastic. It takes you right there into a complex medicine, animistic culture, you know, at its demise and rising up. Fabulous. Those are two that leap to mind. And then there's, and then I'm rereading all of Joseph Campbell and all kinds of stuff like that. Although I'm finding him grumpy too. It's interesting as we get older. I go back to all my, I studied with Joseph Campbell, and I have been granted backstage to important people. So I know everybody's befoibled. I have the skinny on a lot of famous people, and we love them anyway. But as in reading Joseph Campbell, because I thought, oh, okay, I'm going to India, let me read of Joseph Campbell's, you know, Indian journeys. And it's like, he's a pretty grumpy, cotchety old guy, you know, in a lot of ways. And, you know, not completely likable, but we love him anyway. So we're all befoibled, and we all make contributions. And I don't know any teacher or spiritual teacher who has not been thrown by the high horse of their own teaching. And see, Trickster likes that, you know, and Trickster creates an atmosphere where we can blow it, you know, and ha-ha, you know, we don't have to be anything but honest, right? That's kind of part of our dedicated kind of a deal. Okay. Oh, wow, from New Zealand. Hi there, from the Maori land of wonderful people. Kia ora from New Zealand. What a great international thing we got going here. So before we deconvene, you know, do people want to bring up, you know, a shared blessing? We can all hold things in our heart, you know, that we want to manifest. Because just to, yeah, and you can raise your hand, and I'll also wade through some of the chat, and then we will get ready to deconvene. But let me just show this this other, you know, these beautiful things, because there is such bounty. So look at, again, we love symmetry, and we know, again, our fabulous brains that are democratic, visible, invisible, real, imagined, are just as real. That's what the Kabbalists tell us about images and vision, that an image in our brain is made of molecules as much as this table, right? We love that. And there was a wonderful short film on a woman making puzzles, and she said, we are pattern tracking beings. We love symmetry. Symmetry is endogenous to us. We all love beauty, including animals. They really have a strong sense of aesthetics and pattern and beauty, as well as being are beautiful. Yeah. So, you know, in this, you know, in endogenous realm. And she said that, you know, when people put a puzzle piece in place, like, it stimulates the same portion of the brain as sex. Woo! And also when we learn new words, right? And this astromytho, you know, wonderful thing that encourages us to learn more words. And words are the first technology of intimacy, the magical realm. Especially now, when we learn new words, it also stimulates the same portion of the brain as sex. It gives the brain a little orgasm. Puzzle pieces and language are erotic to our brains. They go, woo-hoo! You know, so take heart, everybody. And look at this beautiful symmetry. Uranus is at 24 degrees Aries. It's stationing degree. It was inward, inward, inward. It begins forward motion behind us on January 2nd. Outward, outward, outward. And out we go into this resonant field of connectivity according to our inner dedication and our deepest desires for ourselves and our fellow critters on this planet. But Mercury Uranus says to everybody now, where would you like genius? Where do you want aha? Where do you want to be synchronicity to guide each person to just the right thing at the right moment that gives us this feeling that we are in a large, vast, living system? Philip Dick called it Valis, vast, active, living, intelligent system. All hail Valis. We're all in this dream together. We all have pieces of the puzzle, you know, and it's a positive intrigue dynamic, you know, who brought what. So symmetry, where would we like genius? Where would we like to be, you know, connected? So there's that. Well, there's a lot. Oh, 9 new messages. Okay. There's a lot here. I will save this message board. I work well, play with horses. Leadership qualities of horses are amazing and teach us a lot. Yes. Well, it's like the wise pony in the fairy tale. And again, the horse's energetic field, you know, so much with autistic kids and all of those things. But I've heard also that horses are quite conservative. They like to be fed in the same order. And if it gets disorderly, they're like troubled. You can let us know if that's right or not. But yes, the energies are beautiful. Emmanuel. Okay, yes.
We have raised hands.
Yes. Excellent. O come, Emmanuel.
Rita, actually, she dropped off. I'm unmuting Rita now.
Oh, okay.
Rita, you're unmuted.
Thank you. I feel like I'm in a bit of a puddle here. I've been just in a world. My heart's beating real fast. I've cried and I've laughed. So many emotions during this beautiful sharing. Caroline, thank you very much. That's pretty much the gist of what I want to say.
Oh.
And to be reminded, as you've so eloquently stated, to really, really be hunkering down and sincere in what one's true desire is. And I find that so strengthening and confidence building as I really pare away all the you fill in the blanks, your words are wonderful, all the unnecessary fluff that at times can be such a distraction. So that's basically what I wanted to do, is raise both my hands in appreciation and honor.
That's very wonderful. I am replenished by that. You know, my moon in Virgo, just to be, we're all honest back here backstage, I always go, oh, I hope I'm doing good enough for everybody. But anyway, thank you. That's great. And the realm of feeling, and yeah, and we have three people who raised their hands, and we will get right to you. But I also wanted to say, part of the Mars Jupiter right now says, you know, to everybody, you know, what do we want to feel like, and what do we want to feel like to others? And part of what I love increasingly working with this beautiful language is, for each one of us, with so many gifts, we all have what these planets represent, endogenous, residing within us, and we can feed them, and that's what I love to do in these councils on Monday night and the shift course and everything. So part of our dynamic is Saturn, the Saturn part of all of us, and Saturn says hello inside all of us. Saturn part of all of us in Capricorn at a great degree, which is eager for incarnation degree. We have Saturn and Venus and the Sun and Pluto all in Capricorn. And soon Mercury will be in Capricorn. It's the age of Capricorn, I say tongue in cheek. But so Saturn's is I think a part of us least understood. It's a part of us that is really good at setting intention, taking vows, defining things. But Saturn's really terrible at, well, how am I going to do that? That plunges us into depression, going, oh no, I can't do the thing. Go, no, that's not Saturn's job. Saturn's job is what? Jupiter and Uranus, Jupiter with Mars and Uranus all spicy, and they're coming into a playful, quirky accord with each other. Jupiter and Uranus chime in and say, we'll do how. We will be your booking agents. You know, you tell us what, we'll do how, do common sense things, but don't worry about how, because we're all moving into this field of reciprocal kinship blessing by the power of our dedication and the wondering about our desire. Everything is very generous now with Mars trine Neptune. We don't even need to know what we want. We can wonder. I wonder what I desire most. I wonder what I desire to be, to do, to have, to contribute. That's really strong. And then Jupiter and Uranus go, we'll connect you to those things. Especially, it's pretty spicy now. And it was it was bumpy getting here, right? But it's like it's like everything in a way. It's like, oh no. It's sort of like, you know, for those of us who grew up in the 60s and 70s tripping, you know, when you take an entheogen, at first it's daunting. It's like, whoa. And then it's like, And I think it's like that now. It's like, you know, it's okay. It's going to be okay. Jupiter, animated now, today, you know, in medieval astrology, was called having a guardian angel. And let's let's animate that for everybody. It's a wise part of ourselves that when we stare into the abyss of forlorn bleakness and aloneness and despair for the world and everything, it comes up behind us and gently puts its hands around our shoulders and goes, time for a cup of tea, Rita, Caroline, Jaguar, Reb Zen, Lucy, right. And the other way we can think of it is we're all comprised in a unique, treasured, and valuable experiment, each one of us, nobody else like us, but with the building blocks of creation, you know, and that idea of, you know, what is it we, some thought that came and went away. Let's take somebody who's raised their hand and maybe they will remind me what I was about to say. Oh, in Ireland. That's so great. God, what a great team here. Let's keep it going. Feel free to join us on Monday or on the free call, shift call. We can send you information about how to do that on the 13th. And then there's a shift course. This is, you know, but this is sincere marketing because it's like, let's keep this going. What a beautiful, beautiful team. It's a 12-week course that begins right on the lunar eclipse of positive intrigue on the 30th. But yes, participants raising hand. All right. Feel free.
I'm unmuting.
Somebody. Everybody speak and you'll know who it is.
It's like a roulette game. Malone.
Yeah.
She had her hand raised. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Before Hello. She messaged me privately that she was excited and wanted to say that she was so, I will mute you again and we'll get back to your audio issues. Now I'm going to unmute Rita.
Rita was.
Thank you. I had my turn already. Pass me.
Yes. Yeah. So, Rita.
Oh, thank you. All right. Thank you.
We're all backstage
now
together.
Now Simone.
Aha. Oh.
Oops, Simone muted.
And there's Erlene going. That's
Simone?
Great.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Great. It's wonderful to be cahooting and collaborating. And I have a lot of Jupiter and I'm really feeling it now. Thank you so much, Caroline, for all of this. I have a very anticlimactic question after that majestic statement you just made, which is a couple of us in the chat missed the name of the second novel that you recommended.
Oh, it's called Tikal, T-I-K-A-L, by Daniel Peters. It's out of print, but everybody's really good at finding stuff. And it's, again, one of the best books I've read it twice. You know, and it's like, oh, it's so deep and fabulous. But, well, everything, you know, and also everybody will find what they need, but all the stories, all the myths, like the Mabinogion, everything. But you reminded me of the thing that I threw into the air and needed to catch, the Jupiter Guardian Angel. Yes, thank you. Because we can think of it as a being that, you know, pulls us back from the abyss of despair and feeling like a pathetic, alone weenie in the face of a vast, uncaring universe going, no, you're part of something. The other thing is, you know, Jupiter is our curiosity, you know, and all the parts of our psyche represented by planets and signs of the zodiac and all, you know, have their different attitudinal responses and sometimes reactions to things. But Jupiter, this part of us that we are honoring so much, this epiphany, you know, Jupiter's primary response to everything is curiosity. How interesting. I mean, other parts of us are like, oh, no, the world's terrible, it's terrible. But Jupiter goes, how interesting. God, I feel like hell. I wonder if I could get out of bed. How interesting. Whoa, the world's in a terrible state. You know, there's so much difficulty. How interesting. And that we can think of as the buoyant, curious part of us that is jaunty. It's in Scorpio. So it's a jaunty journey to the underworld. It has buddies. It quips. It's got a, you know, buddy. And it's also an irresistible magnetizer for even for bad people that come up to one, you know, and say, oh, I was going to kill you or harm you, but I sense that you're authentic. Your dedication is deep. Your inside and outside match, or at least you want to go that way. We're all befoibled. We're all aspiring. You know, so I want to change teams from being a bad guy and a robber and a killer to your team, but I have underworld skills you will need. That's very happening right now. So we want to be inviters to everybody. Come on over. You know, curious allies. Nobody's perfect. We speak to the good part of ourselves and others, and we understand the bad part. See, if we understand the bad part, we can be in the right angle of relating so that we are unbetrayable. even though fairy tales start off that way. But if you really know about somebody's sketchy self, and then the good thing, you can angle, spiral away from the sketchy thing, so there's no need for melodrama going, oh, they did me a terrible thing. Of course, you know, but here's this good thing. So may we all be trickster, redeemer, agents. Ah, yes, and who else wants to say hello? Yes. That's good. That's good. Right. It's true. Oh, there's beautiful Leslie Murphy. Yep. No, we all have to go. That's good. Right. We zoom in, we skid out, you know, there's blessings. And then just a last little bit and we'll have a coyote chorus blessing, which is great. Exactly. Goodbye, Leslie. Goodbye, everybody. Leslie, you, I love the picture of you and your cute partner. It's, oh, everybody, who brought what, you know, great, great partnerships are here too. I love all these people from, yes, Ireland and New Zealand. What a great team. And I am happy to say more about the Monday Night Council. You can jump in and you can jump out. Imuna's part of our team, so are a number of people here too. It's the theme this week, and how do we cultivate our trickster capacity? It's audio only because I like being invisible. We might do Zoom, but it's nice being invisible sometimes. And happy to tell you more about that. People jump in, jump out. Some people have been there for 10 years. It goes on forever. Yay. And then there's the Shift 12-week course on the Zodiac. We can tell you more about that. But for now, let's have each person hold in their heart, you know, a desire that they would really like, the next thing. Not what you think you should want. What is it you really want when you're honest with yourself? Because all desires are pure if we cook them back to what they're for. You know, and just for that, because as we exit, the coyotes will be blessing that particular desire for everyone. Okay, everybody got a wondering or the gist of a desire? All right, Grand Wazir, let's have our backstage allies chorus us out. Oh,